written in chalk, the echo of Arthur Stace, explores the legend of the man who became Mr. Eternity and how that word ended up emblazoned across the Sydney Harbour Bridge at the turn of the millennium. This award-winning documentary is now available to watch in the free Vision app. Just tap the Watch tab and scroll to the Written in Chalk channel. If you don't have the Vision app on your phone or tablet, download it when you search Vision Christian Media in your app store. Or click the link at vision.org.au/app. Vision Watch. Vision Watch. Another way Vision is helping you look to God daily.
realfaith.org.au.
Well, in my final year at high school, the headmaster came and pulled me out of class and said, "Graham, what are you doing next year?" And I said, "Well, I'm going back to the farm. My parents want me back on the farm." And so that was the plan. And then I said, "Well, I'd really like to go to university." It almost brings tears to my eyes because it was just so great that this guy cared. He said, "Well, I can get accommodation for you for $10 a week, Graham, if you want to go to uni. And then I've got a Commonwealth scholarship."
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Graham McLennan comes from humble beginnings in farm country in New South Wales and has gone on to travel all over the world pulling people's teeth out. So it's a good thing he's a dentist, as he's been involved in medical ministry in several countries. But that is just the tip of the iceberg. He's also been involved in Christian radio, Christian schooling, and even has dabbled in politics for a while in the 1980s. Just a few of the things that he's been involved in. So we have a lot to cover. Welcome to the program, Graham McLennan.
Thank you, Eric.
Glad to have you with us, and you're coming to us from your home, your historic home in Orange, New South Wales, is that right?
Yeah, it's built in 1878.
1878, yeah. And it has those high 12-foot ceilings. As you know, my wife and I and our children had a chance to stay at your home at one point.
Yeah, you did. It's a Gothic Revival home, double brick, and a beautiful old home.
Yes, and the thing that I remember the most about it is that it has those 12-foot ceilings and you have books all the way up to the top in your library.
That's right. I'm here looking at them right now. But the interesting thing about the home was that we felt we should use it for teen challenge work as a drop-in center in the 70s.
And so that is kind of the heritage. You've used that house for ministry. And yeah, as I mentioned, I stayed at that house and we were on our way to a Christian conference and you were kind enough to use your gift of hospitality to let us stay there, but that's just part of the tradition of what you've been using that house for all these years since the 70s.
That's right. Correct. Yeah.
So we'll talk about your house a little bit later as that becomes part of the story, but now let's go back to your childhood. You come from humble beginnings in farm country. Tell us about what it was like growing up there.
Well, we lived in a little village and Dad worked in a petrol station that he had and carted wheat and was a share farmer, and that's because he had four brothers that returned from the war and there was not enough farmland, and so he lived in a little village called Yamundjeri near Dubbo, between Dubbo and Gilgandra actually, and so we grew up there, and I went to a school of about 40 children in about seven classes, and I actually topped the class of five or six children, you see. And then
top of the class.
My word. And then when I went to the primary school in Dubbo, I came about last out of 35 children. Actually, I came 33rd from memory because I wasn't taught anything at Yamundjeri Public School. And even though coming top of the class, we used to go to school in bare feet and so on.
Yeah, did you have to look out for snakes and stuff?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah, Dad killed 28 snakes in one day. It's on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald, actually.
And
So my older sister used to take Condius crystals and a tourniquet when we went to school, so they were pretty
just in case.
Yeah, I've tried on snakes and done lots of things. I can tell you snake stories for a while. But anyway, when I went into town to the school there, I came, as I said, nearly last. And that was in the half-yearly exam. And then in the yearly exam, I came in the top four or five. So they thought, I've jumped almost 30 places. What's that going on here?
Yeah.
So by the time I got in the sixth class, they thought I might have had some potential. So I got a scholarship then to Hurlston Agricultural High School, which is a very highly selective school its or sister school in Sydney is the top school in Australia, actually. Mm-hmm.
So you had to go off to boarding school because you won that prestigious scholarship?
Yeah. So that's what got me on the road to being out of the little bubble that I would have grown up in, I suppose. Being a farm kid, I was supposed to go on the farm, and that's why I went to Hurlston, because I was the grandchild that was going to be inherit the or look after the property, and I used to spend most of my holidays. I wasn't used to going on holidays. Actually, I used to go out and work on the farm, do a lot of ploughing.
That was your holiday?
Yeah, ploughed thousands of acres on an old Benz tractor.
Okay, so tell us about your time in boarding school. How did that go? I understand there was a little bullying going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was bullied a lot, and then I did it myself, actually, in my second year there. But I was terribly homesick. But after a while, you know, you've got to have some great mates. And I didn't have problems with, in those years, in the late 50s, we didn't have problems with pornography or drugs. And we didn't know who these strange foreign people were called females. And so until we got home. And so
it was an all-boys school?
Yeah, it was all-boys school.
Oh, okay. And how'd you do in school?
Well, I did well. I remember topping, coming second in history, modern history, and probably why I was interested in history, even though I did poorly sometimes in the humanities. But this is interesting because I really did well in the subjects where I liked the teacher. Mm-hmm. And so if I liked the teacher, I did well, and if I didn't, I wasn't really interested. So I couldn't handle novels. So, in actual fact, I've got a whole wall full of novels, but I've only managed to read one chapter of one of them. And literature really wasn't a high priority for me, but anything that is factual. And we all got on as an agriculture. I was a bit agricultural, really. I was thinking about the land and what we'd do and improve the property. And it was 3,000 acres. It's just a living area, really, with sheep and wheat and some cattle and probably 5,000 snakes.
Okay, and then after high school finished, what was next in your life?
Well, in my final year at high school, the headmaster came and pulled me out of class and said, "Graham, what are you doing next year?" And I said, "Well, I'm going back to the farm. My parents want me back on the farm because it's their means of getting back onto the property, because he loved the land, Dad." And so that was the plan. And then I upset everybody by saying to the headmaster, I said, "Well, I'd really like to go to university." And so he said, it almost brings tears to my eyes, because it was just so great that this guy cared. Mm. And it is interesting because he said, "Well, I can get accommodation for you for $10 a week, Graham, if you want to go to uni." And then I got to come with a scholarship. A lot of bright kids got scholarships in those days. So here I was off to university. The reason why I nearly chose medicine, but before medicine I was thinking about being a vet, because the guys from Hurlston did either agricultural vet. Hardly anyone had done dentistry. It was just that my sister had worked before she went to teacher's college. She worked for a dentist, and so I thought, well, these dentists, they're wealthy people, you know, they've got their farms as well as their profession. So I thought, I should do something like medicine or vet or dentistry. And so I ended up thinking dentistry was the easiest, because one vet said to me when I went out with him one day, he said, "Well, at least they can tell you, a human, what's wrong with them, you know, an animal can't." So I thought, "Oh, that's good advice." I loved the people. I did dentistry for 50 years, a century, and 48 years as a dentist, but a couple of years before then treating people. But it's the relationships you build on trust with people is great.
So you went off to school for dentistry at university.
Yeah. None of the family had gone off and done anything like that.
So you were the first in your family, so that was unprecedented.
Yeah, they're all farmers. Yeah. Coming back from the war, you know, with it affected them. And they went through the depression, and that knocked them around. And, you know, we didn't have electricity or anything in those days.
Yeah. You know, so was it an all-boys school as well?
Well, the thing was that we were 65 in the year, and only two of them were females.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So
not officially.
Well, yeah, like engineering is the same. There's some faculties where there were mainly boys, blokes, and but in arts and so on, they're probably 80% were probably female. So
how did you find university?
Well, I found it great. It was a good time of being sort of set free and doing what you chose to do, and that's where I discovered females. And I took, in my second year, I decided they were so great that I took out a different one to about 10 different balls that year. I don't know where I got the money from, but I actually then became a Christian in my third year at university, and a fellow who was a Christian had failed his year, the easiest year in dentistry, the third year, and I went into third year, and he led me to the Lord. And through that, he introduced me to my future wife, Pammy, who we met, and she was at WEC, Worldwide Evangelization mm-hmm. Crusade. She was there working, and she'd been a nurse, and she was involved in doing things. So I discovered we were living almost right next to each other. She was Royal Prince Alfred Hospital doing nursing there, and I was in Newtown. So we sort of got befriended one another. In actual fact, we met at WEC, and then we decided to evangelize with the Anglican Church in Newtown, door knocking. So we went around door knocking, and that's where we started to have an interest in one another. And as I crossed the road, she lagged behind, and I was worried about it, and I held her hand. And
that's when it started.
That's when it started.
Our guest today is Dr. Graham McLennan from Orange in New South Wales, who is sharing his life journey. As we're hearing at this point in his story, he has just met his future wife, Pam. Next, we'll hear from Pam and get her side of the story. All that and more is coming up when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scatabo, and today our guest is retired dentist Dr. Graham McLennan from Orange in New South Wales. Before the break, we ended with Graham sharing how he met his future wife, Pam. Now we've invited Pam to join us to share her side of their story.
Well, we met out at a monthly meeting at the WEC, Worldwide Evangelization Crusade, and I'd always been geared to missions. As a child, I heard a missionary speak who was a nurse, and she appealed for people to do things that similar to what she was doing. And so that's how I ended up going to these monthly youth meetings at WEC with a couple of other nurses. Anyway, I was talking to this guy, telling him what a great Bible study I was going to at the local Anglican church in Newtown. Actually, the guy who had led Graham to the Lord a short time before said, I'll have to introduce you to Graham. He lives near you. So Graham started coming to this Bible study, and then the rector encouraged us to go door to door to talk to people about coming to another group he was running. So that was really how we got to know each other.
And he reached out his hand.
Yeah, he reached out his hand when we were crossing the road.
And that's how it all started.
Yeah.
What happened next in your relationship?
Oh, well, we were just going around together. We both had a similar calling, I think, to missions. Mm-hmm. And I was praying on the roof of the nurse's home one night, and I felt the Lord say that we'd be married within a year.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote the date of my diary and didn't think much more about it. But later in that year, we had an interview with the South American Mission Society. And they, after interviewing us, they said, oh, we want you to come back 2 years after you get married. Well, we were only just engaged. Graham was going into the army about 6 weeks later or something.
Yeah. So that wasn't going to work.
No, that wasn't going to work. And my mother was getting really frantic about how on earth we could book a venue or anything to do with a wedding. So anyway, Graham had taken off on a Youth with a Mission crusade in Fiji. And he saw a young couple get married over there, and he said, well, why don't you come over and get married?
And just like that?
Just like that. And anyway, it wouldn't have even been possible, except I did actually turn 21, I think 3 days before I got married over there. And but also I didn't need my parents' permission at that stage over there. But I had to have the matron's permission because I hadn't quite finished the 4 years training in nursing. So, so that was interesting. I had to go and talk to the matron about whether I could get married.
The matron of your school?
Matron of the nursing, yeah, the hospital, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
During our 4 years training, we were not to get married, and that only changed probably, there are a few people.
Oh, so that
me.
Was the rule at that time?
Yeah, that's the way it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, droves of nurses left because they wanted to get married.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So, a long story short, you end up in Fiji to get married.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, how long was it after he suggested this that you actually flew over there?
Oh, a few days.
Oh, wow. Just like that?
I think.
Yeah, just a few days.
Yeah, just a few days.
Had a honeymoon for two.
And we had a honeymoon for, what was it, two or three days?
I don't know. 2 days. Flew back to Sydney. Graduated and went into the army. Had a honeymoon for about a week at the most, and had the rest of my honeymoon with 400 blokes at Pakapunyal, and then officer training.
You are such a romanticist, Graham.
Yeah. So, and we didn't meet up again for 6 weeks. I think it was. I went down to Melbourne.
Sorry, once in 3 months.
Was that it? Three months.
Wow, what a way to start a marriage.
Once in 3 months. Mm.
Yeah.
And how long have you been married now?
53 years.
Oh, so it worked. It worked out.
Yes, I think it worked out, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. She's wonderful.
What happened after that, Pam?
Well, it turned out that the day I got married, it was actually within that 1 year from when the Lord had told me I'd get married within a year.
Oh, wow.
So it was really quite amazing.
Now, let me ask you, Pam. So you were raised a Christian and a strong Christian, even wanting to go into missions. And here you met Graham, who had just become a Christian.
Yes.
How did you feel about this kind of baby in the Lord?
Oh, I think I just felt I admired him because he had a similar calling. He was keen on missions too. And I wouldn't have sort of gone out with someone who didn't have a similar calling.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that you guys met going door to door, asking people to go to a study, I mean, that's pretty devout right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you about the intensity of his faith.
Yes, yeah. And it's probably the guy who had led him to the Lord ended up as a missionary.
And then your early married life, when you finally did get together, what happened?
Well, that was an amazing story, too, because I went on to do midwifery. So we thought we still wouldn't be together because Graham was posted over the place, Singleton and various other places. But eventually he ended up swapping with this guy at Wagga, and so that worked out that we were together.
And I understand that early in your marriage, both of you went through a heartbreak with the death of one of your children. Can you please share with us about that?
That was very difficult. I had a twin pregnancy, and I actually guessed it was a twin pregnancy before the obstetrician did, I think, because the Lord said he'd give us a double blessing. And
oh, wow.
So that, I think that's what made it sort of hard when Kathy died. And it was actually right when Graham finished in the army that she died at 3 months. Mm. And it was cot death. And, it was very difficult thing to go through, and we were pretty shattered. And the Lord just ended up leading us to Orange. And that was when, a year later, the sale, and we felt we should look for a big, large house, and this, it went through a year later, right on the exact day, on the anniversary of when she died, and then when she was buried, the money actually came through. So, that was just, I guess it was just the Lord telling us, out of death, life comes forth.
Yeah, to have a baby for 3 months and then die of your... referring to it as cot death, but now it's known as sudden infant death syndrome.
Yes, yeah.
So that was a painful experience.
Yeah.
But as you're mentioning, God kind of helped you in another way, blessed you in another way to help you heal from that.
Yes, not the way we're expecting.
That's, yeah, yeah.
We just arrived in Orange to do a locum after our child died. We were just devastated because of that death. It was really, really horrific for us. So when we came to Orange to do a locum, we felt we should stay here. And that house, actually, we paid $17,000 for it and the two blocks of land at the back. And it's an interesting story because we were going to be turfed out because we had all these people here evangelising the city with the vans in the spare blocks. And a fellow came along and said, how are things going? He said, well, we're going to be evicted tomorrow.
Wow.
And he said that, I've got some money just inherited. And so we put him up for a year or two and while he finished his schooling. And so he paid for the deposit. And it was interesting because it was the exact hour to the funeral of our child that died. So we paid $17,000 for it, and we sold the two blocks of land for $6,000 or $7,000. So we ended up paying just $6,000 for the house. So
goodness.
If that wasn't God, and the sign to us was that it was a year exactly to the very hour that our child Kathy died.
So the two of you went through that horrendous experience.
Yeah, a John 12:24 experience. Which when Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it bears a lot of fruit. And it's in the Old Testament, the emphasis was on prosperity and flourishing and so on. In the New Testament, I think it's on suffering. Mm. And people don't want to know about that, but it's through suffering that we have character and discipline and so on, and strength and so on. Yeah.
And so you bought the historic house that you're sitting in right now.
Yeah, right now.
But you didn't just use it for yourself. You used that for ministry.
Yeah. Well, we were having charismatic meetings here, and we had a lot of young people coming, but we felt we should go overseas. Matter of fact, the Lord spoke to us saying that, we couldn't learn that God was going to show us if we stayed there at home. So we went and studied under Dr. Francis Schaeffer, but we did also study, before we studied under Schaeffer, we studied with Teen Challenge because...
in the United States?
Yeah, in both in Orange County and in Brooklyn.
Teen Challenge is a famous drug rehabilitation program that went
most
to the
successful
office.
In the world.
Yeah, most successful in the world. So you wanted to be a part of that? Is that the idea, to train?
Well, what happened when we were in Sydney after Pam and I got to know each other, and others, we went to the cross, and we're just working in the cross with drug addicts, and they either became Christians or died from overdoses. We prayed for a lot of people there, and we went around, and we got interested in what Teen Challenge was doing, so that when I came out to Orange, Tony Dewberry, who was leading Teen Challenge at the time, came and said, well, would you like to have it as a drop-in centre? And I said, yes. And so he said, we'll get you to be trained over in the United States. So that's why I went to New York.
So you trained for being a part of this drug rehabilitation program, but I understand that when you came back to Australia to start the program, it didn't work out.
Well, we had to have the support of the churches, and so we had a luncheon with the Ministers Association, quite about a dozen of them, and heads of the churches, and we shouted them for a meal, and we discussed what we planned to do, Tony Dewberry and myself, and they were not interested. They said there's no drug problem. I think they really were protecting their own turf.
So after all that, then it didn't come about.
No, but that's why we got involved in other things through Francis Schaeffer, that we needed to be salt and light in places of education. That's why we got involved in commencing a Christian school and so on.
For people who don't know, Francis Schaeffer is one of the most famous Christian authors in modern evangelical Christianity, and he started a community in, was it Switzerland, to train people in how to integrate our Christian faith into all aspects of life. Is that kind of a good summary?
Right. Into our society. Yeah. So it really affected our lives. So that's why when we came back, we got involved in a number of areas with education and with government, with media, helped commit the Christian radio here. And we founded stations in areas such as Geelong, Newcastle, Canberra, here in Orange, Port Macquarie and so on.
And then also you helped start the Christian radio station in Vanuatu. How did that come about?
Yes, well, it is romantic. That's what.
Oh, romantic! Some more romance. Okay, let's hear this.
And the same happened in Nepal where we started there. Actually,
more
with
romance.
Yeah, another romance. Actually, what happened is that my son had gone to Vanuatu with a parliamentarian's son and to build a Christian school, actually. Mm-hmm. So he went over there and met this lovely airline hostess with Air Vanuatu, Melanesian young lady, and cut the long story short, they married and asked for advice about whether they should live here or back in Vanuatu. And I said, I think it's Rita, our daughter-in-law, that needed support more than Michael. So Michael decided to live over there, and because they're very community-minded, a lovely family. They almost mm-hmm. have a birthday every weekend and rock the teeth and lollies. because she's got so many cousins from Pango Village in Port Vila, but they've got a lovely little place there. And Michael's got involved in distributing the Bible, but we did set up the first Christian radio there. In mm-hmm. actual fact, it had the most listenership there for some years, 60%, simply because there were only two or three stations operating, mm-hmm. and the government one only operated during the day. So we operated 24/7, and so that's why. But, you know, some of the restaurants, and you hear them, the radio with, my Redeemer Lives and all this have just brought tears to my eyes.
Oh, some fantastic. Of
the things were, yeah, and the supermarket was playing it, and it still plays it on a Sunday. And so it was really helped renew people's lives there.
That was retired dentist Graham McLennan sharing his story, and it's hard to grasp how one man could be involved in so many ministries over the years. And we haven't even mentioned all of them. We've just scratched the surface. Finally, we heard Graham briefly mention that he helped start Christian radio stations in Nepal and Vanuatu, and that there were romances connected to each of them. Well, next time we're going to hear how Graham's son Michael met and married his wife Rita in Vanuatu. And then the time after that, we're going to hear from Tabitha Pandey, who met her husband while on a missions trip to Nepal. So we have some romantic stories for you coming up right here on Real Faith. Until next time, I'm Eric Scadamo saying so long and God bless.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.